Megan McCracken, thank you for spending this time with us, attorney with the UC Berkeley School of Law's Death Penalty Clinic. And that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is hiring. We have an opening for an on-air graphic designer. Go to democracynow.org for details. I'll be speaking at Martha's Vineyard Saturday night, July 26th at 7 o'clock. Check out the details at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is local activist Daniel Hong, in to talk about the current state of the Occupy movement. But first, we have this community announcement. There will be an urgent call to stop the Israeli massacre in Gaza this evening in Portland. It's a rally in Pioneer Square that starts at 6 p.m. At 6:45, there will be a march with stops along the way at stores targeted for BDS actions. At 7:45, the march will return to Pioneer Square. There will also be a bike swarm for Palestine and a freedom ride for Palestine that will circle Pioneer Square.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the Worldbeat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin' Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the second annual Portland Roots Festival, Sunday, August 10th, from noon to 8 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland. The Portland Roots Festival explores the food justice movement, healthy living through nutrition and exercise, and celebrates the flavors of African diaspora food culture in an urban landscape. The celebration will feature local artists and performers, a keynote speaker, African, African-American, Afro-Latin, and Afro-Caribbean food vendors, local nonprofits, and micro-entrepreneurs.
Again, that's the second annual Portland Roots Festival, Sunday, August 10th, from noon to 8 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am Joanne Hardesty, and it's my pleasure to be here with you today. So do you remember the Occupy movement? I certainly remember the Occupy movement. I remember the two parks downtown Portland that were taken over for a period of months. I have here in the studio with me Daniel Hong, who is a longtime organizer with Occupy, and more recently, he's been with Strike Debt Portland. Welcome to the program, Daniel.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And you are organizing for a Occupy gathering that's going to take place in Sacramento later this month?
Yes. I've been involved in organizing the third annual Occupy National Gathering happening next week, this next Thursday, July 31st to Sunday, August 3rd, in the capital of California, Sacramento. And I've been specifically involved in transportation, organizing a local Portland, Oregon caravan to drive down to Sacramento and back. I've also been involved in facilitating weekly conference calls to plan the gathering.
Mm-hmm. So for, I think for maybe people who lived under a rock and didn't know that Occupy took place, what was Occupy? What is Occupy, I guess I should say? I shouldn't assume that it's was. What is Occupy?
What is Occupy? Yeah, big question. And one that's kind of rooted in history. 2011, as we've seen, was a remarkable year of dissent and social movements, really starting with Middle East revolutions in Egypt and Tunisia, and other protests around Syria and Libya, known as the Arab Spring, that happened in January all the way through March and into May. And then we have the European summer with uprisings in Spain and Greece for the summer of 2011. And then came Occupy Wall Street, the Occupy movement in September 17th, 2011. So what is Occupy? Occupy is the American manifestation of that entire year devoted to grassroots movements, challenging the status quo, and organizing for a social and political movement that serves the interests of the 99%.
Very well done. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. I'm talking to Daniel Hung, and he is organizing a caravan that leaves here. Are you leaving on the 30th or the 31st?
Yes, we are scheduled to leave 9 a.m. On Thursday, the 31st. Okay. So we would be arriving at evening time for the first day. Mm-hmm. It's kind of unfortunate because we would be missing the full day anti-racism training the day before Wednesday the 30th. Mm-hmm. We'll make do.
But that's the best you could. Yeah. Well, right. Well, how wonderful. So you said there's a full day of anti-racism training that's starting on Wednesday next week. Mm-hmm. So that's the 30th. And then on Thursday, what's happening on Thursday? Because just a whole weekend of events and activities, right?
Oh, absolutely. So Thursday, it will be social justice themed, environmental justice themed, and Native rights themed. We'll have Indigenous elders lead the entire day, from opening ceremonies to that evening's community assembly. A form of a general assembly but in the Native tradition. Mm-hmm. And then Friday will be free day. It will be open to large portions of time for people to do spontaneous actions and workshops and teach-ins, mm-hmm. as well as education on various issues. It'll be a networking day because our slogan for this year is Together We Rise. We really want to emphasize on coalition building, network building, intersectional organizing. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday will be our big days of action in March throughout the city and capital. We couldn't even fit all of the actions and marches onto our tentative schedule because they arrange as far as corporate personhood to war. And thank you so much for the urgent announcement made before our broadcast about today's National Day of Action for the Gazan people, because that will continue for certain during the gathering, and hopefully the siege will end by then.
Hopefully,
yes. And there'll also be a large protest puppetry performance by the San Francisco Mime Troupe on Saturday, and Sunday will be our easy day, our Sabbath, where people will solidify all the connections and friendships and relationships people made, and we will have our closing ceremony and get back on the road.
And back on the road and back to Portland. And so tell me, Daniel, how did you get involved with Occupy?
That's a very funny question because as 2011 was a a year of global shakeup. Mm-hmm. It was a time of huge interpersonal growth for me. Mm-hmm. I guess the short answer is say it took my conservative history teacher in junior year history class who introduced me to Occupy.
Wow.
Yeah, he actually showed a presentation to the classroom during like current events time for the October 6th commencing action that led to the occupation. And of course he was side blasting it from the beginning.
Oh, so he wasn't putting it in a positive light.
No. Emphasis on conservative. Okay. Emphasis on. No. He was very against it from the beginning. Uh-huh. But he pretty much did. He pretty much worked the opposite for me by kind of introducing me to this movement. Uh-huh. And I have no prior history mm-hmm. to activism.
Of organizing, or being involved politically.
Both within the electoral process and not. I came out of a very long indifference phase, mm-hmm. just being really cynical.
So Occupy caught you.
Caught me, yes. Because the movements with the Arab Spring actually mm-hmm. caught me early on.
Mm-hmm.
Early on in 2011, and understanding the correlations and the intersectionality and the legacies from the early movements in 2011 down to Occupy, and then Occupy's legacies to movements across the country and around the world today, mm-hmm. Continuing to form and arise. It's beautiful.
All right. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And so you were a student. You got your eyes open to these massive protests that were happening in other parts of the planet. Did you participate in the Occupy downtown Portland? Were you one of the players there?
Yes. I say I was a very humble player. Mm. I originally came down to the camps for humanitarian causes uh-huh. and really wanted... I actually worked at the kitchen to serve for the majority of the 31 days of the occupation, mm-hmm. I believe. 31, 37.
Yeah, and I think that's about right.
Yeah, maybe 37 or something. But I came down to serve in the kitchens, mostly because I wanted to feed people. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to have to sign anything or cross any red tape.
Right.
The politics came much later.
Yes,
and it came very gradually. Huh. Because I came in being fully unaware of what was happening. Mm-hmm. I came in fairly asleep mm-hmm. and with a countless amount of impressions and relationships and friendships that formed from Occupy mm-hmm. and the countless conversations and dialogue I had with people and the countless opportunities for organizing after the camps was a large growth for me in kind of understanding my own political leanings and vision and my openness to viewpoints.
Mm-hmm. And so how weird was that for you to go from this very, I'm not really paying attention, to all of a sudden, oh my gosh, all this stuff is happening in the world and it's happening all around me. And
I mean, more specifically, like a sheltered middle class privileged lifestyle mm-hmm. of ignorance mm-hmm. to one of now.
Awareness.
Mm. Yeah.
Very cool. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Mr. 60. Welcome to KBOO. Hello.
Thank you very much, Joanne.
Hi, welcome.
How are you two doing?
We are wonderful. How about you?
I'm fine. I am a kind of old 63-year-old anarchist. Mm-hmm. Who participated in all the Occupy Portland marches and was beaten, attacked, and arrested on many occasions. And I just would like to point out that Occupy Wall Street, not Occupy Portland or Portland Occupy, was anti-capitalist. And this is according to the gentleman who started Occupy. Also, Occupy Wall Street was a counter movement to the teabagger movement. And once again, the people who started Occupy have stated that themselves, that they were at home watching what the rest of us saw, these crazy maniacs with guns on their hips and standing out in the middle of people's towns all over the country, you know, thanks to Dick Armey and the Koch brothers' money. And that's what they count. That's according to their own statement.
That's absolutely true. They talked about what informed them, and they talked about the movements in Portuguese and Spanish, the Tea Party. They talked about Libya. They did talk about a lot of reasons why the Occupy movement was needed.
Well, and can I clarify about Mr. 60's comment about who started Occupy? That actually is a very recent 2013 controversy.
Oh.
Yes. And it really was started in social media. To kind of give the original timeline, it was the anti-consumerist Canadian magazine Adbusters who originally made the media call, the call on their media for an occupation on Wall Street in September 2011, and the controversy came 2 years later, where there was a supposed revision of history, where former editors from the Adbusters and web administrators from original encampment websites such as OccupyWallStreet.org tried to hog the credit essentially, and then thus having a large uproar in social media, kind of actually leading to the reclamation of social media accounts to the larger movement, because alongside this just incredulous credit taking, there was actually problems with social media administrators blocking others, and it was not very pleasant. And
so hang on for a sec, Daniel. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that Mr. 60 gets his question or comment in.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
My point isn't really who takes credit for anything. My point is, what was the nature? And this is ongoing, and I appreciate Dan is getting to this, and I really appreciate you've got this on your show, because this is absolutely unresolved, and this is absolutely, in my view, as a radical, as a violent radical person, I'm not at all like the average occupier, you know, peace-loving kind of person, because I'm not a social reformist.
Right.
And that gets to the crux of why I'm calling. I have two basic questions. Why did Portland Occupy become almost instantaneously, as an organized or semi-organized structure, become a social reformist-only kind of thing or entity? And why did they spend so much energy and time resisting radicals like anarchists like myself? And of course, to the point, there was incidents where people, Occupy-type people, threw anarchists to the cops even. And I just would like somebody to speak a little bit on that, and that's really all I'm calling about, is just to help us all understand what took place in Portland, what was different than Oakland, California, or in New York, and what could have been done better, both by radicals and my people who went to jail and weren't supported by anybody like myself, and the social reformers groups, church, almost exclusively church or religion-based social reform groups or something, or political social reform groups.
Right.
I don't know how to describe them.
No, I think you're doing a good job.
I'm trying not to be offensive. I'm really not calling in to get demarcations where we can start swinging and fighting. I'm long done with that. Mm-hmm. I've been a political radical activist for 45 or something years now.
Well, thank you so much for your questions, and Daniel and I will attempt to answer them.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Sixty, you kind of mentioned earlier in your comment about you being a self-proclaimed violent radical.
Anarchist.
Yes, but that's a really good point he made, because there was a large question of nonviolence mm-hmm. during the Occupy movement. Now, going on to the General Assembly endorsed and founded articles from the original New York occupation, the Principles of Solidarity in September 17th, the Statement of Declaration for the Occupation later that September, and the Statement of Autonomy. Mm-hmm. Those three documents both highly advocated and suggested for nonviolent, peaceful, civil disobedience. Mm-hmm. And of course, that was left to questioning by other groups regionally and locally. Mm-hmm. And each Occupy had to have their own process and was given their own responsibility mm-hmm. to deal with the question of nonviolence mm-hmm. or violence, and as means of tactics. I know several branches used St. Paul's principles and reformed statements of autonomy to kind of recognize being neutral to both tactics, while at the same time having emphasis on autonomy for independent people, having independent actions separate mm-hmm. from the group, because high risk actions can negatively impact people and leave responsibilities unanswered. So,
well, I certainly know that with Occupy, I mean, I'm glad that the premise was nonviolent, but I can't help but be struck by the point that when occupiers were unarmed, they were constantly confronted mm. with heavily armed police. And the police made bucket loads of overtime just sitting in warehouses waiting to go out and start beating up on people. And so
They laughed about it. They laughed about it among themselves when we were locked up in jail and in their custody and before they attacked us in all those marches. We got reports from people all over saying, yeah, they're just laughing how much Occupy got them overtime pay.
Oh, yeah.
And at the same time, I would like to point out that Mr. Reese was on the air all that time saying how the police budget was now $3 million in debt. Now, you know, 1 month later, $6 million in debt. And mentioning that it was because of Occupy that
yes.
they had spent that money
yes.
on.
And in fact, that year he overspent his budget by $10 million, right? And he blamed Occupy totally for that. So we certainly have had a disconnect between the public response to Occupy and the community response to Occupy. Daniel, you said
can I make one example?
Yes, you may. I thought you were gone, but yes, you may, Mr. 60. Go ahead.
I'm really sorry, Joanne.
That's okay. No worry.
Right now, this is so pertinent. Right now, within the last month, there was armed snipers, and I know a lot of people don't know this. It isn't hard. You can go online and see it. I personally don't know the state that this took place in. They were coming to get some right-wing guy's property from him because he wouldn't pay any taxes on it, and you know, and said, you know, I'm armed, come get me. The federal marshals, these are armed federal marshals and robocops in riot gear, like you saw at the Waco incident when it started.
Right.
Going down the highway, armed snipers, this is hard to believe, but look it up. They lined up on the overpasses with their high-powered rifles pointing at federal marshals, who turned around and left quietly.
Right.
The second incident, down on the border in Texas, armed militant, right-wing, Aryan Nation, you know, teabaggers lined up, blocked the buses with little children in it, pushed, and they did show a little bit of that on national TV, pushed the robocops and federal marshals, pushed them back, and made them turn that bus around. Did anybody see a cop anywhere? And I would like to point out about teabaggers, because I followed that so closely when it appeared on my radar. They were armed. They were threatening use of their weapons. They were threatening violence against the United States of America and against the federal government of the United States of America. Not one arrest.
Not one.
One attack.
That's right. That's absolutely true. Thank you so much for your call. You have a good day. Did you want to respond to...
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
To 60s, Mr. 60. Yes, the militarization of the police. Just almost to the point where many Occupy protesters, many of them, again, being like me, who never had a prior experience to organizing political action. So again, coming in with a bit of a naivete about the world.
Mm-hmm.
it was, again, still unprecedented even for the most hardened activists.
Yes.
I know and with the surveillance, the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund back in May released a full report about the spying operation against the Occupy movement and the amount of monitoring of activists and sabotaging. I want to address two concerns Mr. 60 addressed. One was jail support. I definitely know during the occupation there was a law collective out and a defense fund being in place. I know not everybody's needs were met, unfortunately.
Right. Right.
And second, he said about social reform groups and churches being
the primary
core, the core. It's interesting he says that because less than 2 months after the eviction in December 2011, there was an office space rented and founded at St. Francis of Assisi Church on Southeast 11th and Oak, and it's still going on. It's still maintained.
Is it still there?
Still there, being maintained by the
volunteers.
OPDX. Yeah, yeah, by volunteers of the Occupy Portland info team and the Friends of Occupy Portland, which was the 501c4 nonprofit fiscal sponsor for Occupy sponsored projects since April 2012. And it's still there. It's less than two or three blocks away from the KBOO studios.
Wow.
And we want more people because I'm involved with the Occupy Portland info team and the Friends of Occupy Portland.
Wonderful, wonderful. And one of the other things I wanted to say that Mr. 60 you alluded to earlier, which is you said you worked you worked in the kitchen. And I still am so proud and pleased to know that Occupy fed 3,000 people hot meals three times a day.
And that's just in that's in Portland alone.
That was just in Portland. Yeah, that was just in the park blocks downtown Portland that took place. And it begs the question, those 3,000 people are still hungry, but where are they now? Mm. It definitely begs that question. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello. Yes. You know, what I've learned from my life is that a lot of people in this country run or live on their egos. And one of the reasons why I don't like to belong to or support movements is that I found that a lot of the activist leaders and their supporters ran on their egos. And I believe strongly this weakens movements. And I will say goodbye.
Thank you, Joanne. But you know what's unique about Occupy was it went out of its way not to have leaders, right? It bent over backwards to say, no, we're all equal. We have to do things by consensus. So it was just the opposite of every other leadership organization that I've ever been associated with.
Yeah. So definitely, ego. I agree with Joanne about egos hurting movements.
Mm.
Absolutely. And while I do admire about Occupy being very unique of not having, well, being both separate from the Democratic Party, which is a huge turn, and being emphasis on having having no formal leadership structure, but having a horizontalist approach, did inhibit some ego clashing, but unfortunately, in Portland and in Wall Street, again, there were still ego clashing and infighting inevitably occurring, and it's fallout from the current social distance of Washington, the federal government, the state government, in corporations, the corporate bureaucracy being so out of touch and yet being so impactful to the rest of society.
Yeah. You mentioned the Democratic Party, and it's interesting that you mentioned that because there was actually really no party affiliation at all associated with Occupy. And it never became a political force. Right. So is it, do you think that's part of the conversation that's happening now is to think, I mean, were there missed opportunities because there was no ask, right? Initially, there was no specific ask.
Well, certainly the Occupy movement at least understood under its government structures, such as the General Assembly and the Spokes Council, which is another
component
of organization. They stood away from partisanship. They stood away from affiliating from any parties or para-party organizations. But I see that later, specifically in 2012, 2013, and 2014, how independent citizens who from the Occupy movement becoming candidates for local office.
Oh, have you?
Yes. Well, one example is Shama Sawant in Seattle, Washington, who ran on the party line of the $15 minimum wage. Mm-hmm. She was an active participant in Occupy Seattle. She led lots of teach-ins and protests, actually. And in fact, just another example of a small of I believe someone in Michigan running for state office from Occupy Kalamazoo, which was this place of the 2013 Occupy National Gathering. Yes, last year's gathering. And he's running for office. And there's also small town elections being won by independent candidates.
So good. So that means that there some political action has come out of just naturally through people who've been involved in Occupy movements in various areas.
Yes, at least electorally.
At least electorally.
Electorally. I mean, I have right here with me, I have my own compiled list of my top 7 Occupy wins.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get to that before we end. Let's go back to the phone line. I want to get back to your top 7 list. Hello, Harry. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
During this national meeting, I was hoping some things would come out, like will there be a national occupation day where it could be nationwide?
Good question. Is that it?
No, I have a few other.
Okay. Oh, you're waiting for Daniel to answer. Daniel, is there going to be a National Day of Action that will come out of the Occupy conference convening?
Yes. Well, I know at the start of the gathering Thursday, there will be a podcast, an online component of podcast being sent for. There has been a national public Occupy movement press briefing call every Thursday at 12 noon Pacific time on Maestro Conference through Inner Occupy, which is another original encampment website. And there will be a national podcast to have an online component for people.
So as far as his question,
National Day of Action, there will, I believe Saturday, will follow other tides of actions. So,
my next question would be, you were talking about into the political realm, how about an occupied political, meaning it'll be occupied Republican, an occupied Democrat, an occupied Tea Party. And you guys just join all these parties and be part of, and bring your problems and your concerns to the political party. If you're occupied Republican and you're a member of a Republican, well, they have to listen to you. Possible?
I'm not visualizing that, but Daniel, are you seeing what? Are you seeing the possibilities here? Well, I don't think Occupy actually self-selects that way, right? I mean, people kind of self-select with Occupy around issue areas, not necessarily around political.
It's very much issue-based, not party-based. I failed to mention this earlier, but the legacies of Occupy actually do include some political parties. In fact, I know the After Party was formed through a coalition of Occupy activists and Detroit activists.
The After Party. I like the sound of that.
After Party. Game
and
over
where is
wall.
That? Right.
Yeah, in Detroit, Michigan.
In Detroit?
Yes.
Wow.
In fact, I believe there's a regional gathering, a satellite gathering being planned for in Michigan. So I believe specifically in Detroit. It may be in Kalamazoo. But in Michigan, in compliments for the Sacramento gathering. In terms of any of the Occupy National Gathering schedule, there hasn't been a
National schedule developed?
No, there hasn't been a workshop presented specifically on party building. However, again, as I mentioned before, Friday will especially be free day. It will be lots of free time, lots of opportunities for attendees to create their own workshops and teach-ins. And yes, to answer your question, Joanna, there is a schedule. It was just released yesterday, and you can find it at interoccupy.net/natgad2014. That is the main website for the Occupy National Gathering, and then follow the links there.
One last question.
Okay.
Occupied Wall Street first started because they were because of the recession. It was caused by the banks, and that's
right.
Why they were occupying the banks and Wall Street itself.
That's right.
And like here in Portland, they had some demonstrations at the main headquarters of the banks downtown.
Right.
Very few of them, but they kind of concentrated on city government and everything else, and not concentrating on the banks itself who bought us this recession.
I'm so excited you mentioned that, because that is a fundamental issue, core issue that the media failed to report, that social opinion fails to reflect and understand on, that it really, I believe as Michael Moore put it, confronted with the question, who brought these protesters out? It was Bank of America who brought these people. It was Goldman Sachs who brought these people. It was Wells Fargo who brought these people out.
Well, it was pretty obvious here in Portland because anytime a protest went to the bank, there were armed robocops outside all the banks. They mysteriously showed up outside the banks. They didn't care when we were in the park. They didn't care when we were walking down the street. But by golly, you get too close to a bank, and all of a sudden, all the robocops showed up.
In fact, I remember a Portland Mercury article, I believe being posted in 2013 about basically talking about budgets for corporations on private security and how Bank of America went out of its way to hire security guards, 20 of guards every day during business hours for many of its branches in Portland for months and months and months.
Yes.
Long after the occupation. So that just shows the amount of fear that was instilled.
Thank you so much for your call.
Goodbye.
Have a great day.
You too.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, David. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes. I just wanted to clarify something and get your opinion on something. I take it the Occupy movement involves the 99% and the 1%.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would assume that the fossil fuel industry and the biggest people in that are part of the 1%. We can agree on that, right?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Okay, well, I feel that they've used their propaganda in a way to make it seem like alternative energies like solar and all of these, there's a problem with technology. We haven't studied it enough. We haven't done the technology enough for these to really enter the picture in a large way. And my opinion is that that's false. And that's, you know, there's other things. And that's about all I really wanted to say.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate your call.
Yeah, okay. Thank you so much. In fact, during the Occupy National Gathering Sacramento, there are several workshops devoted to dirty energy. Mm. In fact, there is a workshop scheduled about oil trains, mm-hmm. exploding oil trains, mm-hmm. Being led by actually a local person, someone from the Vancouver Action Network, mm-hmm. and he is also riding in my rented van for the caravan down to Sacramento.
Very cool. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I want to give you a chance to go through your top 7 successes of Occupy. So let's start. Let's start with number 7.
Okay, number 7. Number 7's actually a local success, Occupy Medical in Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, yes.
Yes, they are a mobile street clinic that was founded since the Occupy Eugene camps, and mm-hmm. they have now surpassed 500-600 plus hours of free medical care on the streets. It is unbelievable, the populations they serve, anywhere from people in the middle class mm-hmm. to seniors to undocumented people in the poor mm-hmm. to the fringes on the fringes, homeless to
and they go to people.
They go to.
I met them. It's a pretty fabulous group of folks that started that.
Yeah, so a group of dedicated medical professionals.
Yes, yes. I had the pleasure of meeting them. Very cool. So, yes, I agree with that. Okay, that's number 7. Check. Number 6?
Number 6 is Occupy Madison Build. It is an organization from Occupy Madison, Wisconsin, and they are participating in the small home movement by building 100 square feet living spaces for the houses, 100 small houses.
Wow.
Yeah. And creating a housing lot, I believe. Something like a trailer home, but mm-hmm. cuter.
But with
yeah.
pretty little 100 feet houses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And for individuals in need.
Very cool. Okay, number 6. That'll work.
Number 5 I mentioned earlier is the individual successes of candidacy,
mm-hmm.
how Occupy facilitated the victory of local public offices like Shama Sawant in Seattle, Washington, mm-hmm. while remaining strictly nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next.
Number 4 is Occupy Sandy. It's the people-powered Hurricane Sandy relief effort in 2012, mm-hmm. Raising easily over $1 million, and commentators speaking how their decentralized tactics beat the Red Cross and the National Guard combined in delivering aid. And they're still on the ground in Sandy-affected communities, really trying to, one, vouching for the communities there for equitable, justice-led development
mm-hmm.
after the
rebuild,
mm-hmm,
yeah,
during the aftermath, and building helping to facilitate worker-owned cooperatives
uh-huh.
as a viable business model to keep at bay corporate interests.
Wonderful. So that's number 3?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number 2?
Well, that was number 4, actually.
Oh, number 4. Okay, yeah. Number 3?
So number 3 is Occupy Our Homes. Occupy Our Homes is a national website founded in 2012. They have their own launch your petition petition interface online, and they've their website as with concrete branches such as in Atlanta, Georgia, and Minneapolis, Minnesota. They've launched over 350 anti-foreclosure campaigns, and they're winning.
All right.
Two is Rolling Jubilee. This project from Occupy-founded Strike Debt canceled $14.7 million in medical debt across the United States infiltrating the debt marketplace that bankers and financiers use for defaulted loans to sell to debt collectors for pennies on the dollar for debt collectors to then pursue debtors, often illegally.
Wow, excellent. Well, that's a great list.
Well, I have one more.
Oh, okay, one more. Number one.
Number one is Bank Transfer Day for 2011. Mm. See, Bank Transfer Day before Occupy, while was led by coalitions of credit unions, was nominally obscure. But in 2011, November, Occupy facilitated over $50 million in loss for big banks.
Wow. Well, that's a pretty impressive list of the wins. And I guess before we leave, I want to talk about, okay, so that's the history of success, and kind of like, what are we looking forward to for the future? But before I go there, I want to tell our listeners what's coming up on KBOO. At 9, join Teresa Mitchell for an hour-long press watch with the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, Eric Cascadia is off today. We'll go straight to Flashpoint featuring a panel discussion on the bombing of Gaza and more on the plight of thousands of children fleeing violence in Central America. At 11 on Between the Covers, we'll hear about Josh Wall, a coming-of-age story about a boy who wakes up with no memory and encounters a world of bullies, liars, and strangers. At 11:30, I thought, please, as soon as I read that. At 11:30, the film show features drive-in theaters. They still exist in Oregon. Find out where. And we'll hear about the upcoming Portland Film Fest. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support of community radio. If you have not become a member, you still can. Just go to kboo.fm and click the tip jar. It's that easy. If you want to join Daniel Hong and I in this conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. So, Daniel, you must be getting excited, headed to California. What do you hope personally that you're going to get out of this gathering, A? And then B, what do you hope comes out of the gathering as far as the Occupy movement is concerned?
It's a good question you asked that, because I really don't know what to expect.
You know, did you go to the one last year?
See, the 2012 and the 2013 Occupy National gatherings are both in the East Coast.
Oh, right.
The 2012 was in Philadelphia, and the 2013 was in Kalamazoo, Michigan. So they were far away from Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And not only this is my first Occupy National gathering I'm attending, this is my first national political conference I'm attending.
Ah.
This is the first time I'm meeting face to face with occupiers outside of the Portland metro area.
Right,
this is the first time I am going on vacation for politics. I really out of town. Oh, seriously. On its own. So I don't know what to expect. I'm really excited. I'm just grateful already.
Right.
There are a core group of organizers that have been working on this since 2012, and they had so many opportunities to give up and burn out, and they haven't.
And I'm
so proud of them.
All right. Well, it certainly sounds like you should keep yourself open to the opportunities that present themselves, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Because you just don't know what you're going to find when you get to Sacramento.
And I wanted to give answer your question about how the Occupy movement might benefit from the Occupy National Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
There is a very strong emphasis this year on racial justice.
Mm-hmm.
Again, with the full day anti-racism training the day before the beginning of the gathering on Wednesday, July 30th, and indigenous leaders leading the first day of the gathering. I really hope that social movements catch on about their own racial biases through the Occupy National Gathering, because there'll be a lot of conversation, and not just like traditional lines of white and white and black, right. white and Native American, right. but I see a workshop on Chinese and black relations, which is really important. So as I am Korean, so and there, yeah. And secondly, I just hope for that there'll be coalition building and there'll be recognition of organizations and their work and their dedication and their histories and their stories. It's particularly sad how grassroots movements tend to reinvent the wheel at times.
Yes, yes.
And pave over the successes, however marginal or nominal as their perspective goes, by generations before them. And that's it. And I have to say enough.
Yeah, I agree with you there. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Gordon. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. I just wanted to say kudos on all the work that they do and the success that they had, but I have a challenge for them. I think about a month ago, there was a whistleblower that came out of the World Bank and the IMF, a woman who's been there forever, and she said it's a 0.1%. There's a bank that controls all banks that run roughshod over all laws and all governments, and it is the biggest bank in the world. I can't remember the name of it. If you want to Google it, you can. Whistleblower of the World Bank. She talked about the bank. She named the bank, and I think we really need to start occupying the money system and really making an input on that. And as well, the Israeli ambassador or whoever, and the Jewish embassies and all that stuff, because we got to stop this Palestinian genocide and we need to stop this bank, and they should be liable and they should not run over all the laws, and they should look that up. And I think that's the next step, is to attack the bank and the Israel on the financial system. So kudos, good luck, and thank you so much for all the work that you're doing for me and my family and everybody else.
Thank you. Appreciate the call, Gordo.
Yeah, I can respond to him.
Absolutely.
Yes, there. I did hear about the whistleblower from the UN. I believe it could be... not the UN, the World Bank.
Yes.
It could be that the World Bank and the IMF are the most powerful banks in the world. I might be wrong. And, it's... awful. It's awful. And again, more reason to revitalize and revive protest and civil disobedience. And the recent news and current events in Gaza is obscene.
Yeah, it's absolutely obscene. I think that's the most appropriate word I've heard so far. And so, Daniel, this is going to be a wonderful opportunity. I think you will be radically changed by being in an environment with activists from all over, right? Any idea of how many people are expected? And you think there'll be 1,000?
Yeah. So...
because California alone could bring out 1,000.
Oh, exactly. There's few other like key locations on the West Coast that you can bring it to. The state of California is one. Mm-hmm. Seattle may be another. Portland might be another. We have a Facebook event page out, and it's been out for like since January of this year.
Uh-huh.
And over 6,000 people are invited. I believe over 300 or 400 people are said they're going to go, with another 200 or 300 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
We don't mind if it's on the leaner side, because again, Saturday
we can get deeper into the conversations though.
Yeah, exactly. And Saturday we're going rogue. We're going unpermitted to a nearby park.
Yay.
By the capital. So prepare.
Well, and Daniel, I love the fact that this has awakened you politically, right? Mm-hmm. You are a self-admitted you know, living a privileged middle class life, and all of a sudden
sheltered
middle class life, and all of a sudden you're awakened. And when you talk about Occupy, I can just see the sparkle in your eye and see the enthusiasm that you talk about Occupy with. I asked you before we went on the air what your major was, and you said political science. So I had to laugh about that, because maybe that means that you're, you know, when you get out of school, you're going to actually be able to change our political system so that it actually works for the 99% of us.
Yeah. Well, that is a daydream I have. Yeah.
Well, good. I share that daydream, because we need more people who are aware that, you know, what we have isn't working for most of us. And if it's not working, the thing that I find most ludicrous is all our solutions to the problems that Wall Street have rained down on the population has been, oh, well, let's just give Wall Street more money, and right, and that will fix it.
Let's enable them, right,
and that will fix the problem, rather than saying we could do better. And let's figure out what the new system is that actually has equitable distribution of resources so that the most people benefit from the public decisions that we're making.
And yes, I love, yes, creating alternative economies, yes, and financial systems to make Wall Street irrelevant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
Daniel, you and I are on the same page. All right. So any last information you'd like to share? How do people contact you if they want to ride the van? Or,
well, unfortunately, the van is now full.
Oh, darn.
There's already a person waiting in line.
Ah, you got a waiting list, huh?
You're on a waiting list now.
But there's the Facebook page.
There's the Facebook page, main Facebook page, Occupy National Gathering, just any search bar on Facebook. Well, okay, I think the main one. I think there's only one. You can reach me by email at hongd@reed.edu. Again, that's hongd@reed.edu, and I've checked that every day. For questions about the Occupy National Gathering, and for people who want to go, there is an all hands on deck team-wide logistics call happening at 11:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time this Saturday. Please go to interoccupy.net/NATGAT2014. Again, that's interoccupy.net/NATGAT2014, the Occupy National Gathering main website, to find out more. Hit on calendar. Yes, that logistics call is important. We need people on food and printing and security, everything.
Everything. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, Daniel. I am so thrilled to know that Occupy inspired you like it inspired me. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and I will see you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day. Thanks, Steve.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, a couple minutes before 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning. And coming up, we've got Air Cascadia being off today at 10 o'clock. That means at 10, we'll be going right into straight into Flashpoints, featuring today a panel discussion on the bombing of Gaza. Also, Los Angeles City Councilman Gil Cedillo starts a week-long hunger fast to call attention to the plight of thousands of children fleeing violence in Central America. And a recent report from a recent rally for the Trail of Humanity's march to the U.S.-Mexican border and detention centers along the way to protest the treatment of the kids coming over to the border. At 11 on Between the Covers, Cliff Ashpaugh talks about his debut novella, Josh's Wall, a coming-of-age story about a boy who wakes up with amnesia and encounters a world of bullies, liars, and strangers. And at 11:30 on The Film Show, today they feature drive-in theaters. They still exist in Oregon. Find out about the 99W Drive-In in Newburgh, the Northwest Film Center's top-down rooftop cinema, as well as the drive-in at Zidell Yards. Also, we'll hear from Portland Film Fest director Josh Leek about highlights of next month's 2014 festival. But first, join Teresa Mitchell for an hour-long press watch with the news you're not supposed to know. That is coming up next on KBOO.
Tune in to Between the Covers every Thursday at 11 a.m. to hear interviews with locally and nationally known authors from both fiction and nonfiction. Between the Covers, only on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio and Sante Aesthetics and Wellness are proud to co-sponsor A Touch of Portland 2014, an exploration in healing. Saturday, August 16th, from noon to 8 p.m. A Touch of Portland is a KBOO benefit that focuses on the healing arts. It gives participants a chance to sample multiple healing modalities in a comfortable setting. This year will be a block party on Northwest 17th between Davis and Everett. It will feature organic food from local restaurateurs and 8 hours of music broadcast live. We will have multiple modalities of massage, acupuncture, shiatsu, and more. That's Saturday, August 16th from 12 to 8 p.m. A Touch of Portland, an exploration in healing. For more information, go to kboo.fm under events.